Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, why don't we mix it up a little bit this morning?
Yeah.
It's the holidays. You know, we can feel a little bit loosey-goosey. We're in December now.
Oh, okay.
Some experimentation.
So can I ask you how you're doing today? Yesterday I said, how was your weekend? You bit my head off.
Yeah, right.
That's you're not into
it. I wasn't happy about my golf game on Sunday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you talked about playing golf, but you never gave us a score. So what did you get?
I think I shot 81, but...
That's not bad.
No, but I was playing against Gary Groh.
How did you get hooked up with Gary Groh? That's
through
what my dad asked.
Mutual friends up at Bobolink.
Bobolink?
And so, you know...
Wait, did you play at Bobolink?
No, we played at Olympia. Okay. But he's a great player and a great guy, and so you want to play well when you play with Gary Groh. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And what did I do? Yeah.
Were you in the same golf cart as him? Or
we walked. We're naturalists, purists. What are you same golf cart? Yeah, we shared a ball finder together too. What are you talking about? I'm playing with Gary Groh. He's in the Hall of Fame. Not taking carts. Goodness sakes. I hit my irons well, but I was wild off the tee, and I couldn't.
You've been wild off the tee for a while.
Wild off the tee was my high school band name.
Yeah.
By the way.
Wild off the tee.
Yeah.
And how was your putting?
It was terrible.
Really?
I mean, it was embarrassing how badly I putted.
Gosh. Did you sink any putts?
Yeah, one bird.
All right. Well, that's not bad. Yeah. Just remember the one bird, because that's what brings you back to the game.
Exactly. So how are you?
Well, you know what?
All right, not interested. Okay, anyway, so like getting to the
so
show.
Rude. No, we have basketball tryouts today.
Uh-huh.
Fifth and sixth grade girls basketball, and I noticed your permission slip, Mr. Proft, has not been signed and turned in, and you need to have that.
Because I identify as a fifth grade girl.
Yes, yeah. I expect you. Well, I need you down low this year. I'm going to need you to be the center, okay?
Yeah.
You're going to do the jump ball, and then you're going to have to play down low.
Didn't want to hang around with fifth and sixth grade girls when I was in fifth and sixth grade. Don't want to do it now.
We got a big turnout, like 32 girls coming. So maybe I can get LeVar Balls to come and help out.
Well, speaking
of
that.
And his son, Lilangelo, or Lilangie, what's his name?
We call him Jello. Jello.
Jella.
LiAngelo Ball. Nice segue. LeVar Ball yanking LiAngelo Ball out of UCLA just 3 weeks after his shoplifting suspension for that little
sunglasses
incident in China.
Maybe that's what he took, by the way, a pair of sunglasses. Designer high-end ones, but yeah.
We're exploring other options with Jello. He's out of there, said LeVar.
Your
boyfriend, Steve Alford, said, we respect the decision he and his family have made, and we wish him all the best in the future. In other words, see ya.
Yeah.
The best thing that could happen to this team, and probably in terms of cohesion, maybe he'll play for the Chinese national team.
Oh, hey-oh. Now, here's the thing, though. He never, ever wore a UCLA uniform because the pregame that they were going to have, you know, the preseason game was in China, so he never got to do that. Since that incident, he hasn't practiced. He hasn't traveled with the team. He pretty much has been, you know, persona non grata. So, of course, LeVar Ball gets all mad and yanks his son out of the school. It sends the worst message. It's not letting his son be a man, first of all. And he's got to pay for his crime. I mean, he's suspended indefinitely for a reason, because he would be in China otherwise, in prison, if it wasn't for President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's when I sat Peyton and Eli down. I said, I will, as a parent, I would never do this. Yank you out of a program because you're not playing. That's stupid. That's idiotic.
How do you? Was it like Ton and Lie?
Ton and Lie.
You got to shorten their names. You got to have a handle.
Oh, Do you know everybody has alternate names now?
Well, you just
everybody does.
Well, yeah, but I'm not talking about like transgender stuff. I'm talking about like you got to shorten the name. So LiAngelo is Jello.
Okay.
Peyton right, like Carmelo Anthony is Mello.
Right.
So Peyton would be like T to the O to the N.
I like that.
And
or Tom.
Eli would be Lai.
La. I like Lai.
Or I. Or E.
Mm.
I don't know. It's all very confusing.
But yeah, everyone's changing. Remember Jennifer on our trip last year? Our friend Jennifer, she changed her name to Jennifer.
Mm. I just prefer to stick with standards and have.
Okay. What would you be? D to the A to the N?
No, I like when people call me the same thing they call me when I was in school, Mr. Proft.
Oh, okay. When you were a young lad in fifth and sixth grade.
Yeah.
Running away from the fifth and sixth grade girls.
Uh-huh. They were frightening. They still are, as far as I understand. All right, well, sticking on the campus beat since we just gave the ball family update. By the way, Lonzo's still with the Lakers.
Oh, okay. Oh, just in case anybody cares.
Yeah.
All right.
A couple of campus beat installations that are Illinois focused and not Northwestern for a change. That's why I'm drawing attention to them.
Is this about the bus?
No, the bus. Jerome Bettis? What?
No, did you hear about the bus company that was servicing students from U of I to Chicago? They, you know, listed all the amenities of their company and then said, don't worry, when you ride this bus, you won't feel like you're in China. Because 13% of the U of I students are from China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was, they had to apologize, Dan, and take that off their website.
I see.
Yeah. That's your Illinois update.
Well, how about going a bit north to DeKalb, Northern Illinois University? Uh-huh. 70 workshops this semester to train students in responding to oppression and privilege.
What?
Yeah. Conversations on Diversity and Equity Code, run by the Office of Academic Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and other Huxleyisms, conducted for 191 student organizations. Workshops, including situating the self, which helps you understand the diversity lingo, the newspeak, power dynamics of difference, where students are taught critical thinking skills and knowledge regarding how privilege and oppression shape their experiences and perspectives in relationship and communities. In other words, non-critical thinking skills. Engaging systems of oppressions, which immerses dedicated individuals with a lifelong dedication necessary for social justice work. You still think you want to send your kid to NIU and pay 30% higher in-state tuition than their MAC conference peers?
That's the 30% difference in other MAC schools? Hmm. Did you say that correctly?
Training students to respond to oppression and privilege. In other words, indoctrinating them to be little totalitarian monsters on campus and when they leave. There you go, NIU. University of Chicago is embroiled in a controversy. Mello, and there's Jello.
Oh, going over the Oh, by the way, Mello is still committed to go to UCLA next year.
Who's
Mello Ball? The third ball. There's three balls. There's Lonzo.
That's the superfluous ball.
Then there's Jello, then there's Mello.
That's what they should call Mello. That should
the
be
third
his
ball?
Nickname. The superfluous ball. Like Krusty had the superfluous nipple.
Uh-huh.
N Cobra is what I'm talking about. Mm. N apostrophe Cobra.
What's that?
Just like you spell your name, A apostrophe MY. The National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America held a rally for reparations outside University of Chicago administration building. They were joined by the Reparations at University of Chicago Working Group. They do great work.
I'm a big fan. I know you are, too.
The University of Chicago is founded by slaveholders, and the labor of enslaved people can actually be traced through the years, said one of the researchers. The labor of enslaved people actually translates into buildings, endowments, and real hard material resources. As such, they are demanding the university establish a Truth and Reconciliation Committee for the city to discontinue any current and future contracts with the University of Chicago until it agrees to their demands and reparations are so distributed according to NCOBRA's standards. So you want your kid to be a maroon there? Yeah. I think the Nobel Prizes in economics are dwindling at University of Chicago, and so are all the other academic credentials.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell swing.
We're almost there. We're getting closer. I shouldn't say we're almost there, but our goal this year with Food for the Poor, which is a great charity we've paired up with, is to provide food for a year and water for life for 3,000 children in Haiti and in Guatemala and the Caribbean islands, as well as Latin America places affected by the hurricane. Dan, hold on to your hats. We do have a video that'll be released today of my trip to Haiti.
So
you can meet the kids that I've been talking about. You can see the canals where they swim and, you know, where the need is and what they have done to help people. Because they'll come into a village, they'll identify the problems, and then they'll build homes in a matter of a month and a half with help from the villagers. But we need your donations.
If you've ever seen Airplane, it's very much like when Ted and Elaine go on a mission trip to Africa and teach them how to play basketball. That's what the Amy video will be
asking for a one-time donation of $50. Go to 560theanswer.com, search for the keyword food. $50 will provide food for a year and clean water for life for just one child. But we also have a great business benefactor program.
Yeah, the business benefactor program for our successful entrepreneurs, business owners, and operators. $2,500 gift, tax-deductible gift to Food for the Poor. And in response to your gratitude or to your generosity, we are going to gratefully provide 60-second commercials for your business that will air prime time, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays on our station. That is a value well in excess of the $2,500 tax-deductible gift that you make. And we rely on our business donor leaders to meet our goals for these drives. And the goal ultimately is feeding 3,000 children for a year, providing water for those children for a lifetime. So all you do is call Michael Mann, 847-871-1527. 847-871-1527, Michael Mann, that's our sales director. Or you can just go to the website, 560theanswer.com/food, and you'll be prompted to sign up for the Business Benefactor Program there.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Joe Walsh here. President Trump is encouraging 83-year-old Orrin Hatch to run for re-election. That's a mistake. We'll talk about it when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, National Review, contributing editor, will join us at 7:30. And written a number of pieces over the last several days on the Mueller investigation. And he gets back to what he's been saying for some time, including on our show, which is this is not an investigation into Russian collusion. That may be the smokescreen cover story for the Mueller investigation and for the partisans on the left. Yeah. This is an obstruction investigation. This is an impeachment investigation. That's what this is. And so whether or not the president may have obstructed justice, obstructed the Mueller investigation, now is becoming more central to the arguments you're hearing advanced by the left, because that's what this has been from the outset. They never had any evidence of illegal collusion to rig an election with the Russians. So, and since they had a year and a half, and since they've had a year and a half to prove up any such details, any supporting evidence, any corroboration, and haven't, they've moved on because, in part because of Trump's reckless tweeting, in part because you've got Manafort and Flynn now, Manafort under indictment, Flynn and Papadopoulos pleading out to lying to the FBI, and that's it. So there's no underlying crime.
So there's no there.
So now we get to obstruction. Now we go back to parsing Comey's testimony, his reflections on his interactions with Trump, and the combination of Trump tweets. That's the state of play in the investigation. So yesterday, you have people going back and forth because of something the president's attorney said. John Dowd said in an email to USA Today, he being the president, is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. He has more power and discretion on that matter than Department of Justice and FBI put together. He cannot obstruct himself. And the takeaway was the president cannot obstruct justice in any form or fashion. And ultimately, is that true? Is the president above the law? Can a president not, by constitutional definition, obstruct justice? That is the wrong question, because the president can obstruct justice. And I don't think that was what Mr. Dowd was saying. I think he was saying, with respect to the FBI and the special counsel, he has wide berth. As head of the executive branch, he has the power to fire an FBI director. He has the power to exercise the prosecutorial discretion to order federal law enforcement agencies to drop an investigation. He possesses an immense pardon power, but he doesn't possess the power to direct any federal agency to reach a specific conclusion in its investigation. And that's where a president could obstruct justice. And this is Politico had this piece on Jeff Sessions yesterday. Well, Jeff Sessions claimed that Bill Clinton obstructed justice mm-hmm. when he was impeached in the 90s.
And same with Nixon.
Well, that was the claim, right? And so the answer is yes, because if you're trying to direct a federal agency or otherwise unduly influence the outcome of an investigation, then you are obstructing justice and you have exposure.
So President Trump having dinner with Comey and talking about Mike Flynn and telling him to let it go, is that obstruction of justice? Because that seems to be a point of contention.
No.
No?
And, oh, by the way, I don't believe, don't take my word for it wasn't obstruction of justice. Take Comey's. Comey said, we played this clip any number of times on this show, Comey said, I didn't take anything the president said as a directive, because to the question that Rubio asked in follow-up to the Flynn to the interaction about Flynn, what did Comey say? Yeah, basically the president said, hey, get people around me doing something wrong, then go, you know, hold them accountable for whatever they did wrong. So that's not the same thing as directing or otherwise inserting yourself and starting to make decisions that pull pieces out of an investigation to try and determine its outcome. It's not even close. It's not even close. And so the credibility of the FBI becomes one of these material issues in this case. And, you know, you got a lot of people.
I don't trust the FBI anymore. Well, I mean, I was studying, reading into this Peter Stroke guy, the FBI agent number two official in the counterintelligence division. He's the FBI agent who exchanged, you know, mocking President Donald Trump text messages with his girlfriend, who's also in the FBI, an attorney for the FBI.
Mistress is the word.
And by the way, he was there when Hillary Clinton was interviewed in July, you know, almost 2 years ago.
Right. So he was instrumental in the Hillary Clinton email investigation. He's instrumental in this one. He's got a mistress. He's compromised on that score. This is after you've got a deputy FBI director, Andy McCabe, who was accused of a conflict of interest in the Clinton probe because he donated to Clinton's allies. He was Terry McAuliffe. Excuse me, he didn't donate. Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, had donated a lot of money to his wife in her failed campaign for state senate in Virginia. So Andy McCabe, that's your deputy FBI director. How he's still there under Christopher Wray.
I have no idea. But real quickly.
And, by the way, Lisa Page and the other guy.
Stroke's mistress.
Is it Stroke or Strzok?
Well, they were saying it's Strzok.
Strzok. So Strzok and Page, the two people in question here, the one you're describing plus his mistress, mm-hmm. both work for Mueller and McCabe.
And Peter, the FBI agent, Strokes, apparently changed the language in Comey's big announcement, describing Clinton's actions as grossly negligent to extremely careless.
Yes.
That's what. So there's electronic records that show that he convinced Comey to change the speech.
And grossly negligent invokes criminal sanction.
Yep.
Careless, no criminal sanction. So that, it's a legitimate question and that you raise. Do you have confidence in the FBI, or over the last year and a half, has your confidence, faith, trust in the FBI been shaken? Does Mueller, and does as the special prosecutor, but really connected back to the FBI, does he have, and does this investigation have a credibility problem? Do you see this potentially, and we'll ask Andy McCarthy about this, as a lot of career agency guys and gals rallying around the flag to protect the credibility of the agency at the expense of a fair and objective investigation within the scope, however broad it is, of the special prosecutor's commission? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro.
And does President Trump have a point when he was defending Michael Flynn yesterday?
Well, I feel badly for General Flynn. I feel very badly. He's led a very strong life, and I feel very badly, John. I will say this. Hillary Clinton lied many times to the FBI. Nothing happened to her. Flynn lied, and they destroyed his life. I think it's a shame. Hillary Clinton, on the 4th of July weekend, went to the FBI, not under oath. It was the most incredible thing anyone's ever seen. She lied many times. Nothing happened to her. Flynn lied, and it's like they ruined his life. It's very unfair.
Was Flynn under oath, though, when he was interviewed?
Well, yeah.
By the FBI?
Yeah, but
that, to Hillary, who wasn't, which is the goofiest thing.
Well, that's Trump's point.
To the FBI.
That's his point.
Is this off the record, FBI?
Mark Stein, in his post yesterday, Land of Many Coups, He suggests something that's provocative, mm-hmm. as he's wont to do. First, it shouldn't be a crime to lie to the FBI, given the way the FBI lies to us with impunity.
Nice.
And he reflects back on a piece he wrote about Martha Stewart 13 years ago. Martha, it seems, will be going to jail for telling a lie, not in court, not under oath, not perjury, but merely when the feds came around to see her about a possible crime. They couldn't prove she committed a crime, so they nailed her for lying while chit-chatting to them about the non-crime, and for that they're prepared to destroy her company. And he compares that to Flynn because you have a case where Flynn lied about an underlying crime that didn't exist, as is the case with Martha Stewart. And I understand the need for the FBI to demand truthfulness under the penalty of law to advance their investigation. But when they do that and there's no underlying crime, I don't know that that serves the interests of justice. And that's the point that Mark Stein is raising. Mike in Bolingbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hey, Dan, I'm just, I'm curious. You got all these people in there on this special counsel that are favoring the Clinton campaign and you know, flat-out lying, Hillary lying. Is Sessions able to question these people on their truths, their facts?
No. You mean, is he able to provide oversight on the special counsel? No. Uh-uh. Nope.
So they're just going to freestyle and just keep moving forward with whatever they determine the truth.
Yeah, that's basically it. Thanks for the call, Mike. And this is why so many people have problems with the special prosecutor. That's why there were many that were opposed to it. Kent and Joliet.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, I wanted to make the point about, you know, McCabe, not only did he take money, his wife took money for her campaign, he also campaigned with her, which is, I think, a violation of the Hatch Act. And the reason that Flynn got in trouble was because McCabe sent agents to interview him without telling him he was being interviewed. So, you know, he's a bad actor. And the one way that there could be oversight, in my opinion, Dan, is if Trump were to fire Sessions or have him resign, and when Congress is out of session, he could just appoint Giuliani, and Giuliani wouldn't have a conflict of interest. And at this point, I think Sessions is in over his head, so I think Trump should do that.
Thanks for the call, Kent. Yeah, but if he fires Sessions, the attorney general, that doesn't mean the next attorney general will have any oversight over the special counsel. You normally, the AG recuses himself to let the special counsel do his independent investigation. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, Dan. You talk about something that's so discouraging about our our justice system. This thing is all political. These people were these same people that are investigating Trump were the people that were basically now we realize totally covering up for the Clintons and all kinds of shenanigans that went on during the Obama administration. That it is totally unjust, totally
bias.
Evil. It's evil. It's a thing. And American people, we know it, and there's got to be some way to take and stop these people, these Mueller and the rest of his henchmen there. There's got to be something, because every time I hear things, oh, you guys got to let them go, you got to let them do it, they can do whatever they want, and everything, hey, there's something wrong there. There's got to be some way for American people to rise up or something like that and say, hey, it's over, knock it off, stop these people from this. Now, all they're doing is working against the American people and Trump. In the basically trying to destroy his presidency. I mean, Trump can accomplish a lot of good things with, he's got to get these cancerous monsters off his back.
All right, thanks for the call, Craig. Appreciate it. And the other note here, too, and we talked about it yesterday, Wall Street Journal makes the point, from the Wall Street Journal, no justification for withholding all of the information that the House committees have subpoenaed from Congress, which is also investigating Russian influence and has constitutional oversight authority. So Congress is the check, at least on the FBI. Justice and FBI have continued to defy legal subpoenas for documents pertaining to both surveillance warrants and the infamous Steele dossier that was financed by the Clinton campaign and relied on anonymous Russian sources. So there's a compliance issue that is still pending, and the House is readying with more action against the FBI for failure to comply, even though it was several weeks ago Paul Ryan got the word from the FBI that they would be complying, and yet they still haven't.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
We would like to give a hearty thank you to our business benefactors, part of our Food for the Poor 2017 campaign. They include Chris Jacobs Century 21 Affiliated, Hayward HVAC, Twin Supplies, Elgin Recycling, Chicagoland Mold Docks, AHS Plumbing and Sewer Repair, Bradford Systems, Hyperbaric Centers of Chicago, the Neuroscience Center, Cafe Salsa in Countryside, LarryFriendBrooks.com, TI Medical Training. Thank you so much for your support of Food for the Poor.
And these business owners, the marketing directors of these companies, smart move, because for only $2,500, $2,500, it's tax deductible. The money goes to Food for the Poor. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you 40 60-second commercials that will air Monday through Friday from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. right here on AM 560, The Answer. If you want to be like the cool kids, if you want to get on this list, now is the time to act. Call Michael Mann directly at 847-871-1527. And ask about the Business Benefactor Program. Even if you have any questions, Michael Mann, very personable, knowledgeable. He will walk you through the process. Or you can visit 560theanswer.com, search for the keyword food, and get hooked up with Michael Mann that way. But honestly, it is the best radio deal. If you've thought about advertising, taking your business to the next level, this is the time to act. You cannot find a better deal anywhere in Chicago radio.
And Michael Mann has a delightful bedside manner.
He does. He's a wonderful man. But again, the number to call Michael Mann, 847-871-1527. That's 847-871-1527.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and Donald Trump and the RNC, Republican National Committee, in the fold for Roy Moore with a week to go before Election Day.
Yeah, they're back. They're back. President Trump called Senate candidate Roy Moore on Air Force One yesterday, saying that he is supporting him, told him, go get him, Roy. You can do it. Now's your time. Go get him. And the RNC National Committee last night is going to restore funding to his campaign.
Is that the right call? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Is the president and the Republican National Committee, by extension, making the right call to fall in with Roy Moore for the stretch run here to next Tuesday's special election, Roy Moore versus Doug Jones for that Alabama Senate seat?
Yeah, 312-642-5600 is our Turnkey Depro answer line. But Mitt Romney came out yesterday pretty much saying, you know, the majority is no majority is worth our integrity, and is not happy that President Trump and the national RNC is supporting Roy Moore once again. And there's still senators out there, Dan, who want the Senate to expel him. People such as Jeff Flake.
It's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a tough enough time in the coming years. Being the party of Roy Moore is not going to help.
I mean, it's not like President Trump called Roy Moore an icon.
No, he didn't.
And by the way, on the other side of the aisle, supporters of John Conyers rallying for him in Detroit, saying he deserves due process. He shouldn't, president of the Detroit chapter of the NAACP. Why is it John Conyers is the only individual to be denied due process? He agreed to a settlement.
Yeah, he did. Well, so and there's three other accusers from his office. Oh, and breaking news this morning at 10 a.m. So Eastern time, 9 a.m. our time, John Conyers is going to announce that he is resigning, that he's not going to seek re-election. So he's not resigning. He's going to retire. And guess what? There's a family member waiting in the wings, Ian Conyers.
Thank goodness.
He's a Michigan State Senator. He's 29 years old.
Thank gosh.
And he is the grandnephew of Representative Conyers. And Dan, he has graciously offered to fill his great uncle's spot in Congress.
That's what family's for. That's family coming together.
And he wants
to pass public office down like, you know, grandma's cameo. I mean, it's an heirloom to be passed on from one family member to the other. That's the Detroit way. That's the Chicago way.
Exactly. And Ian Conyers told the New York Times, his doctors, Dan, advised him that the rigor of another campaign would be too much for him just in terms of his health because, you know, he is battling stress.
Yeah. Also, reports in a serious note. There have been reports. We've talked to people in the know inside the Beltway on this show that suggest John Conyers, one of the dirty little secrets in D.C. is he hasn't had the capacity to be a congressman for some time, that he's suffering from dementia.
Yeah.
And that has not been disclosed, but that's been reported by people who know. It's kind of an open secret. By the way, just staying on the Dem side for a second before we get to back to Roy Moore. I mean, I couldn't let this go. This is just too brilliant. This is like Illinois governors, these Democrat Congress beings. Bill Jefferson, released from prison.
Who's Bill Jefferson? I'm sorry.
Bill Jefferson from from Louisiana, Democrat of Louisiana. He had the cash in his freezer. Remember
that's
him?
That's right. He's just keeping it cold, man.
$90,000 in his freezer on behalf of the president of Nigeria.
Are there cougarans in there?
He's out, but he had to come out to make room so another Democrat congressman could go to prison. That's our friend Corrine Brown, who was sentenced for mail, wire, and tax fraud involving her sham charity. 5 years in prison she will receive. And so it's like a turnstile. You know, one goes through the out and the other one comes in the in, and everything's right with the world, just like we do with the governor's office, for much of our history here in Illinois. I just wanted to note that you got Conyers and his 54 years there and these problems. Franken still has his problems. And that those have provided great cover, really, politically, for Roy Moore.
And yesterday, while this good news, you know, the President Trump's back on, RNC's back on, another victim came forward. Her name is Debbie Gibson.
Well, she's not a victim.
No, not a victim, but somebody that said that he had a relationship.
Arguably.
Yeah, and she just said, look, you know, he wasn't inappropriate with me. But don't deny that you don't know me. She spoke with the Washington Post.
I was in the attic taking bins of Christmas decorations down, and I noticed one remaining bin in the attic. And when I glanced inside, that's when I saw the memories book. And I opened it up to the first page, and it says I was 17 years old. So I realized, well, this is a person. I met him in 1981, and we dated for a brief.
What's going on with the audio?
No, I don't know, but it's gone away. Ooh.
And it was a high school graduation greeting card from Roy Moore. Happy graduation, Debbie. I wanted to give you this card myself. I know that you'll be a success in anything you do, Roy. I've known Roy Moore for many years, and I met him in 1981, and we dated for a brief time, and we kissed with my consent, and I'm very sad that he's decided to say he doesn't know me.
And then
she
also disclosed that Roy Moore had said, shake your love. I just can't shake your love.
No, wrong. And Debbie Gibson.
Was this the Debbie Gibson who was lost in Roy Moore's eyes?
I get lost in your eyes.
Remember this.
And I feel my spirit's
right. What a genius she was. You went to her mall tours, didn't you?
Yeah, with Rick Astley.
Rick Astley. Debbie
Gibson.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you go. Never gonna run around and
desert you. Yeah, they performed together at Woodfield Mall. Hurt you.
That was a great 1-2 punch back in the day at Woodfield Mall.
So now Mrs. Gibson, the other Debbie Gibson, knows for sure that Roy Moore is lying because she has proof that he sent her a card.
This was the first thing that I've seen that I know personally for a fact to be a lie from his mouth. And he's spewing the lie from the pulpit of a church.
It's simply dirty politics.
Okay, and so...
Well, that's a point that you've made all along, too. It's, you know, why deny that you know these women?
Well, right. I mean, so he's not claiming
anything inappropriate.
Going back to the Hannity interview, when this all broke and he said he didn't date teenage girls when he was in his 30s, that would have been inappropriate. That's what he said.
Right. And that's not true.
Now, is lying about that, if they were of consenting age, which Miss Gibson was at the time, is lying about that disqualifying?
Well, she said he took her back to her house. He read her poetry. He played his guitar. They kissed just that once in the bedroom and at a pool at a local country club. And that's it. And she said he was very respectful and a gentleman. So, and it was appropriate at the time, but she's just mad now that he's denying that he knows her.
So is lying about that disqualifying?
312-642-5600 is our Turnkey Depro answer line. I mean, he's old. Maybe he forgot. Maybe he has selective amnesia right now. Trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
What if he doesn't? What if he's lying about it? So
there are
gradations here. There's things that people may find unseemly, and then there's allegations of illegal conduct at the time. Obviously, the underage girls and the alleged assaults. So if it's the assaults, and the underage girl, I think that's disqualifying. If it's the unseemly. That's a different question. And so, you know, people have to make those determinations, which Alabamans are going to do a week from today. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, how you doing today?
Hey.
I argued with you about Roy Moore when you were talking about him initially when this whole thing came out. And I said I supported Roy Moore and I thought the Democrats were railroading him. I actually sent him a $100 contribution, and I fully support him getting elected. As far as these women coming out of the closet saying I dated Roy Moore and he should remember me.
Oh.
What happened to Dan? Oh.
I didn't hang up on him.
Sorry about that, Dan.
Dan, call back if you like.
So there's a supporter of Roy Moore's. One of the other things that's been mentioned by supporters of Roy Moore's, you know, why now? He's run so many statewide elections. How come this has all come out? Somebody that's been in the public eye for 30 years and a candidate for high office in Alabama. One thing you may want to remember, though, to keep in mind, candidates don't all get the same level of vetting. sometimes people just miss something, but candidates don't always get the same level of vetting. If you're not seen as a threat or you're not viable in a particular race, then you're not going to get the same scrutiny that the front runner does, too.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind as part of the calculus of kind of explaining why there could be a legitimate reason why that has nothing to do with a bunch of people independently coming up with these stories, which I think is pretty difficult to believe. John on 355. Okay, John has the same problem as Dan in Libertyville. All right, nobody.
Let's try somebody else.
How about Bob and Waukegan?
Thanks for taking my call because I couldn't stand the singing anymore.
Oh, but, I'll work on my Rick Astley.
Yeah, really. You really have to.
I do.
This is really sad. I mean, since the Harry Reid slander rule has been put into place for the last 8 years, that's exactly what this is. You know, the other thing you said about being vetted at different degrees, well, Roy Moore was a Democrat until 1994. Maybe that's when he found Jesus and changed his life. I don't know. But I would vote for him. I mean, there's no allegations of rape. There's no allegations of anything inappropriate except with that one 14-year-old girl, which...
Two. There's the 16-year-old, too, in the car. But okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, but when they told him to stop, he stopped, correct?
That's 14-year-old, but not the 16-year-old.
Yeah, she ultimately
16-year-old waitress, he grabbed her head.
Then he let her out of the car, then her boyfriend came and picked her up, remember?
Yeah.
That's her story, at least. But anyway, go ahead, Bob.
Well, I mean, there's no rape involved, there's no, big deal. You go into any bar in Chicago, you'll find 30-year-olds hitting on 18-year-olds all day, or 16-year-olds with fake IDs, for God's sake. 40 years, give them that pass under today's scrutiny. Nobody in Congress is going to get away with anything anymore. So, I put him in office, watching like a hawk, and get the damn vote. Because Democrats would do the same thing. They've got Conyers and Dingbat from Minnesota that they're guarding like they were 24-karat gold.
Right.
It's bullcrap. Play the same game as Democrats, or you're going to lose every time.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Al in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I am not buying what the Democrats are selling. This is a page out of their playbook. I don't believe a word of it. And it's a guy who personally, over a decade ago, faced sexual harassment allegations from a coworker. And I believe as males, we have to prove our innocence instead of having somebody prove our guilt. And only by way of a video camera in the office to where we work at was I able to clear my name. So I know firsthand how hard it is to fight these allegations, and I really think just trying to keep a good man down, and I would vote for him.
Okay, thanks, Al. I mean, again, that's I understand the instances of a single accuser making a false allegation. The instances of many, many accusers all making false allegations, can you come up with one? I mean... There's the Duke lacrosse case, and then people pile on, but that's a single accuser making a single allegation, or the accusation against Cardinal Bernadine, the false Rolling Stone, the Rolling Stone false rape story on Virginia University of Virginia campus. But so many accusers telling so many stories, and Roy Moore suggesting that all of them are false?
Well, there's two
That's
accusers,
unusual.
And the rest are just ex-girlfriends who want to be respected as ex-girlfriends. Because they've probably been bragging, oh, I used to date Roy Moore.
Well, somebody...
And now Roy Moore doesn't know you.
Miss Gibson did say that was sort of kind of a badge of honor because she was a young woman and he was this established person in the community.
Guitar player reading poetry. I mean, that's, ladies love that.
All right, hold on. Let me make a note. Guitar play. Learn to play guitar. I do know poetry. I gotta
can
get
you
the guitar.
Read it?
Yes, passionately.
Good. I'm pulling for you, Dad.
Gary in Barrington.
Yeah, I was just saying that if this stuff had been out there publicly, Luther Strange would have used it against Roy Moore.
Yep.
This is a complete put-up job.
Yeah, I know.
That is a good point. I have thought about that all the time.
Thanks for the call, Gary.
Why did Luther Strange Camp bring this forward?
Because they didn't have it. That's why. That's possible. That's, okay. That's my point, is they just didn't
sure
have
they
it.
They heard rumblings.
Well, there's one thing to hear rumblings. There's another thing to get somebody to come forward to make the claim. And, I mean, look, there are things that are missed. In 2004, when President Obama ran for Senate, the Reverend Wright matter was never brought up in the primary.
I know.
It wasn't brought up until the general election.
And
by the way, it barely brought up in the general election. It really wasn't until they ran for president. So, you know, the political campaigns are messy propositions, too. And so, you know, campaigns miss things. John on 355.
Good morning. How are you?
Morning.
I was just disappointed because you just did it again. And having a discussion about Roy Moore and the first two callers did is brought up issues with the Democrats. I don't understand why in this country we can't have a discussion about somebody without bringing up a problem on the other side.
Well, we can do both, and that's what we did. Thanks for the call. Yeah, we can do both, and that's what we did. And I'm not comparing the allegations against Roy Moore, particularly with respect to those two underage girls, to the allegations against Franken or Conyers. Is that clear? So we can do both. So don't give me this, like, let's just turn a blind eye to everything that's going on the Democrat side or all of the men on the left. 90% of these predators that have been identified in media and entertainment and politics are men of the left, John on 355. So I don't understand why men of the left and those that are fellow travelers of the left won't be honest about the serial predation on the left. All of the erstwhile proponents of Caligula. How about that for fairness? Goes both ways, brother. Tom in Deer Park.
Two things, and I'll be brief. Roy Moore was unfit before these allegations were made. He was thrown off the bench twice. He publicly stated that a Muslim should not be seated in Congress. He publicly stated a female should not be seated in Congress. So now we have the president and the RNC backing Roy Moore, and this is the same group that perpetrated and backed Donald Trump, who was unqualified and unfit before the Access Hollywood. Okay, so if the Republican Party is going down the tubes, don't blame the Democrats. This is internal. We did it to ourselves, and that's what the problem here is.
Right, thanks, Tom.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Merry Christmas, baby.
Merry Christmas, and thank you, LarryFriendBooks.com, Cafe Salsa and Countryside, the Neuroscience Center, the Hyperbaric Centers of Chicago, where you want to go to the Hyperbaric Centers of Chicago.
I think we should have a team-building exercise at the Hyperbaric Centers of Chicago. You sit in a... It looks like, you know, those suntan. Do you ever go to a tanning salon?
No, but I know Michael Jackson slept in a hyperbaric chamber. So
yeah,
I get it.
So it's just, you know, pure 100% oxygen. It helps with a number of, you know, chronic illnesses.
Yeah, look how well Michael Jackson looked.
Stop.
Bradford Systems, AHS Plumbing and Sewer Repair, Chicagoland Mold Docks, Twin Supplies, Elgin Recycling, Hayward HVAC, TTI Medical Training, Chris Jacobs Century 21 Affiliated. Thank you to all of our business donor leaders helping us to get closer to our goal of feeding 3,000 children suffering from life-threatening poverty in Guatemala and Haiti with food for a year and water for life this Christmas.
And you could be a part of our business benefactor program by simply making a donation of $2,500. It is tax deductible, and all the money goes to food for the poor. And a way of saying thank you, we will give you 40 one-minute commercials that will air Monday through Friday right here on AM 560. It is the best deal in Chicagoland radio. I can tell you that. $2,500, and you get 40 one-minute spots to introduce your company to new possible customers. A lot of our business benefactors have stuck with us through the years, and we've helped elevate their companies, Precision Payroll, Turnkey IT, just to name a few. So please get on board. If you have any questions, just call Michael Mann at this number, 847-871-1527. That's 847-871-1527. Or simply go to 560theanswer.com, search for the keyword food, Michael Mann will contact you. And also, if you want to make a personal donation, I know a lot of people, my mom made a donation on behalf of me this holiday season because I don't need another sweater or T-shirt or yoga mat. So I said, Mom, make a donation in my name to Food for the Poor. So a $50 donation will provide food for a year and water for life. Again, the place to go is 560theanswer.com. Search for the keyword food.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
No victocrats allowed. Why? Because we've got a country to save. Join me, Larry Elder, tonight starting at 7 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And so Governor Rauner yesterday had his anti-Al Haig moment, Amy.
Yeah, it's like his tail was between his legs. He looked disheveled. He seems rattled, Dan, that Jeannie Ives is challenging him. I got to tell you, I watched his press conference on three different stations just to make sure I had this right. But listen up. He's not in charge, Dan. He's not.
Illinois would be on a great future. We'd have 200,000 more jobs in this state. We would have lower property taxes in this state. We would have term limits in this state if I was in charge. I am not in charge. I'm trying to get to be in charge.
I mean, that was one of those moments. Like, well, what? And this is what he said on Channel 5, that Mike Madigan's a mobster.
He has rigged the system. He controls it. It's a mafia protection racket. And until he's gone, we aren't going to fix Illinois. We're not going to have a good future.
Yeah, here's what he's trying to do.
Wow. What is this?
First of all, I mean, for a governor, especially a governor, by the way, the governor's office in Illinois, powerful office. Bruce Rauner, weak man. That's the disconnect. For a governor to say, I'm not in charge.
It's scary.
Is that what he campaigned on in 2014? I'll turn around Illinois if Mike Madigan lets me. I'll turn around Illinois with these qualifiers. Was that the campaign promise? The outsider, no-nonsense business guy who's going to take on these intractable problems and the established political order in Springfield the way that the run-of-the-mill politicians for the last several generations haven't been able to. Wasn't that his value proposition? So now, as somebody tweeted, his response running for re-election is, I'm not responsible for my failure. Boy, that's compelling leadership in these difficult times in Illinois.
And Jeannie Ives yesterday, who's running for governor, introduced herself, you know, to the media. We know her here on this program, but a lot of people don't. And she held her own.
The decision came when after HB 40, that was the last straw. And colleagues and people from around the state started calling me and saying, we need somebody to stand up to him because Republicans hold Republicans accountable.
Yeah, and by the way, with respect to the governor, we wouldn't have a job-killing, capital-fleeing, massive structural tax increase without 15 House Republicans. House Republicans folding in with Madigan. So where's the leadership within your own party such that you keep Republicans in line, Governor? Or are you not going to be in charge until what? We suspend both parties and you're just the dictator of the state? I mean, the complications presented by the General Assembly, particularly the longest serving speaker at the state level in U.S. history, are obvious. They were obvious going in and they're obvious today. And yes, he should be held to account. And yes, he is a bulwark against a better Illinois. There's no question. But to be a crybaby bedwetter about it.
It's strange. I need a leader. I mean, he's in charge of the National Guard, Illinois National Guard. He's like, I'm not in charge here. I don't need to hear that from you.
You were surprised that the possibility that Madigan would be the House Speaker if you were elected governor. You didn't contemplate that when you ran? Obviously, that's not true because that question has been asked of Republican candidates for the better part of three decades. How are you going to deal with Madigan? How are you going to deal with Madigan? Now, I don't assume that Madigan will be there in 2018 because I think that Republicans have a chance to pick up the net 9 seats to depose him. I really do.
That'd be wonderful.
But the idea that you wouldn't contemplate it, or that 4 years in, after promising to have the state income tax back down to 3% pre-Quinn and having it back up to Quinn levels with Republicans complicit, and frankly, Ron are complicit because he did a Pontius Pilate on that. I'm going to stay out of it. Whatever the General Assembly decides, then I'll make my decision. That's leadership. That's why we have what we have. But as my failure is not my fault. That's what Ronner is saying.
But as governor, Republican governor, he needs to get the Republican members in line. He needs to whip them into shape, and he did not do that.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. You inspired by Ronner's anti-Al Haig moment? Or is that fair for him to just blame Madigan and say, well, I can't do anything as long as he's there? Well, then why are you running for re-election?
Jeannie Ives pretty much called him a liar yesterday.
He is a traitor to our policies, and that's why I'm challenging him.
Well, he did. He said he would. Yep. He said he would veto HB 40. He signed it. Signed Sanctuary City, trans birth certificates, bailouts of public utilities like Exelon, increasing health care premiums to support Pat Quinn's Obamacare Medicaid expansion. It's not just on the moral issues. So he's a big government Republican. So again, do we want to hold people accountable for their policy choices and the leadership opportunity they fail to consummate? Or are we just going to say, you know, he's got a big checkbook and he'll probably win. So since he'll probably win, I'll just kind of go along with the program, you know, like we did with Mark Kirk last year when he won re-election. Oh, wait.
Well, speaking of the checkbook real quick, I mean, Jeannie Ives, well, she did a great job because everybody said there's no way you can win. He is a millionaire. He'll put millions into his own campaign.
It doesn't matter how much money you have. In the end, you cannot buy back your trust after a betrayal. So Rauner is going to spend a lot of money paying high-priced consultants to try and tell people that he's somebody who he is not.
Well, that's it.
Awesome.
And isn't that what Rauner is doing?
Wow.
I want you to vote for who I am not, not who I am. Isn't that what Rauner's doing? Mm-hmm. I want you to vote for me because I'm not Madigan. Don't fool for me because I don't want to be judged on what I've done. I want to be judged on what Mike Madigan's done. Is that compelling? For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Jeannie Ives' running mate. Remember, you run as a ticket. Jeannie Ives' lieutenant governor candidate is a former state legislator from the Quad Cities. His name is Rich Morthland, and Rich joins us now. Rich, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. It's good to talk with you. Amy, it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Yes, I can't wait to get to know you.
We heard about you from Jeannie when we had her on the show yesterday. Just a quick background, a farmer, a college educator, former state legislator, and also a locally elected official as well. So you've had a diverse and interesting professional and political history. And I wonder how you react to Governor Rauner's I'm not in charge comment.
Dan, that is so reflective of the way his administration has done everything. It's been an abdication, a dereliction of his constitutional duty. We're all constitutionalists here. We understand our balances of power, and he has a lot of it. And what he did through his statements with to acknowledge that he does, or not to acknowledge, but to acknowledge the fact that he won't even embrace the powers that he has under our Constitution. And he's abdicating it all to Michael Madigan. I know Mr. Madigan. I've served under him in his chamber. I understand he's a powerful man, but this isn't his state. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a little agitated.
No,
I'm just so that you know, like any good Republican, I'm driving to work right now. I'm co-teach classes this morning at our Galva Kewaunee campus for Blackhawk College. But I'm telling you, it's just astonishing that this man is not doing his job, and he hasn't done it since he got in, and now he is once and for all said it's not my fault.
Well, what made you decide to join the ticket with Jeannie Ives?
Jeannie Ives, she is so incredible. She is an amazing leader. She is well-trained, well-versed. We all know the whole legacy of West Point. I mean, let's be honest. Jeannie Ives understands the meaning of the word retreat, but it was only a vocabulary word they made her study. I mean, come on. That woman is going to march forward. She knows how to create coalitions. She knows how to assert authority. Everything that Benedict Rauner has not done. And she's going to do it. And I am just absolutely honored that she has chosen to place me on the ticket.
Give us a little bit of on-the-ground perspective as a downstater, somebody from the Quad Cities, somebody right next to Iowa there, a border community, a border region. What the attitude of Republicans in your neck of the woods and as you travel around the state, particularly downstate, what the attitudes you hear about Governor Rauner from Republicans?
Well, you're right, Dan. I do live in a border area. You know, I used to say when I was running for my state rep district, the biggest problem with my district is it has five bridges out and people are using them. And I, you know, what I hear from people as I go around the state and as I'm going to continue to go around more and more of the state, because obviously Jeannie chose me in part because I am neither from Cook nor the Collars to reflect the geography of the state of Illinois and the views of the state of Illinois. It's betrayal that we hear day in, day out, and everyone has their own straw that broke their camel's back of support. And they've turned away, and they have turned away irreparably. When Jeannie says, we know that we have the polling data that says he can't win if he were renominated, she's not kidding, and we hear it every day on the ground.
So when are you going to come to Chicago and introduce yourself? When's your coming out party?
It would be wonderful, wonderful. I'd love to come up to the city. We were there, obviously, last weekend for various events, including Farm Bureau. It's always fun to go to the Farm Bureau convention because I'm a lifelong member. And when I was first a legislator, the Farm Bureau had a program. They've since abandoned it because it doesn't work on Chicago Democrats. They had a program where they would adopt legislators. And I remember walking away from the event where they did adoptions with a bunch of Chicago Democrats. And they said, Rich, did the Farm Bureau adopt you? And I said, kind of hard to adopt myself.
Yeah, right. Well, and so that perspective, too. I mean, sometimes we forget north of I-80 that agribusiness is the number one business sector in Illinois. Obviously, you've got John Deere in your neck of the woods and Caterpillar in Peoria. And thousands of family farmers across the state. And there's this stat that I love. You correct me if I'm wrong on this, but every Illinois farmer feeds 52 families. Mm-hmm. Just to give you kind of the impact, both in terms of economics at the macro level, but also at the micro level in terms of feeding people the world over.
Great job with numbers as usual, Dan. But we don't just feed people; we also provide. We provide all sorts of, it's food, fabric, fuel. We do on Illinois agriculture, and now with the advancements, amazing, because soybean acres nationally are about to exceed corn acres because
really?
The soybean is such a versatile plant that we can do so much with it. But Illinois is the breadbasket of America, and agriculture, you're right. If I were headed to our Moline campus, it's next door, not by accident, to the world headquarters of John Deere, and that's something I never take for granted when I'm doing my job of educating Illinois young people. By the way, don't forget, I'm a community college professor, and like about half of all community college professors, I've had real jobs.
And
my full-time teaching, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. My full-time teaching job really isn't among them. I love it, but it's not the real job that I've done. And I've just, when you're raised on a farm, when you're a farm kid, it makes something out of you that can never be removed. And it's just a real honor that Jeannie sought that out in a running mate.
All right. He is Rich Morthland, former state legislator from the Quad Cities area, as you heard, farmer, community college professor, and running mate to State Representative Jeannie Ives. They are the ticket challenging Governor Rauner and Evelyn Sanguinetti in the Republican primary for governor. Rich, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, folks.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Feliz Navidad.
I love this song.
Feliz Navidad.
Ready?
Feliz Navidad.
Prospero año y felicidad. We want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and you can make Christmas a better time of year for those in need, people who live in just poverty-stricken areas, places like Haiti, which is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. I can't even properly describe the poverty level.
But we're going to see a video of it, your time there, posted this week yet, right?
Yes, we will. And we're asking for a donation, a one-time donation of $50 to provide food for a year and water, clean water for life for one child. Go to 560theanswer.com, search for the keyword food. and please make a donation.
And the Business Benefactor Program is also an opportunity for our successful entrepreneurs to make a $2,500 tax-deductible gift to Food for the Poor. And in return, our thank you to you, 40 60-second commercials for your business on our airwaves, prime broadcasting hours, Monday to Friday, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. Call Michael Mann, 847-871-1527. Again, 847-871-1527. Michael Mann will get you enrolled, or you can go to the website 560theanswer.com/food.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Do you feel at all responsible for raping the middle class and murdering the poor? And the you, I'm asking, the people who are supportive of the House or the Senate or some combination of the two, the tax cut plans that will be conferenced and reconciled and sent to the president's desk. Do you feel at all morally culpable for killing people, raping the middle class, because that's what you're being accused of? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Let me introduce you to Bruce Bartlett, who is an economic advisor to President Reagan, but long ago shedded the supply-side economics that punctuated the Reagan era. Here's Bruce Bartlett with Joy Reid.
It really defies comprehension. Maybe they think that the poor have it so easy that they need to have to pay more taxes to force them to go out and work more. The amazing thing is that people seem to be accepting this so meekly and mildly. It's really akin to rape.
Rape. It's rape.
There's no hyperbole there.
Nope.
No. Nah, move along.
Rape. And let me reintroduce you to Larry Summers, the esteemed academic.
Is he friends with Obama?
He is, and he was Clinton's Treasury Secretary.
Oh, yeah.
And Larry Summers was on Bloomberg. So you got your rape. Now you got your murder.
It's very hard to quantify precisely. My piece explains why an estimate that thousands will die as a consequence of this bill is actually a very conservative estimate, done much, much more carefully based on much more rigorous evidence than the absurd claims made by some that this bill will somehow pay for itself.
You okay with that kind of that amount of blood on your hands? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Let me.
Is he saying that thousands are going to die because they eliminated the Obamacare mandate?
Excuse me. That's a conservative estimate. We're probably talking about tens of thousands.
Okay.
Yeah. But yes, he's talking about the individual mandate repeal and also just the dissembling of Obamacare that's happening. I mean, frankly, it doesn't need much help.
Do you know that more people have signed up because they had a deadline of December 15th?
Yeah.
See, before the day, it was just, you know, take your time, get to it when you can. Now we're holding people accountable. If you want to buy this product, look, you have a certain amount of time, and it ends December 15th at midnight, so get on it. And they are. People are signing up.
Here's some more
advertising.
Thoughtful remarks from men and women of the left. For example, Ashley Feinberg, who's a reporter for The Huffington Post, she tweeted, "Congratulations to John McCain's wife and children on their upcoming tax-free inheritance."
Should be tax-free.
I know, but she's talking about John McCain's death.
Oh my God.
That's thoughtful. Let's see.
Inappropriate. It'll happen to you, honey.
The Palmer Report, millions of Americans died tonight. So did the careers of every one of these psychotic, drooling animals in the Republican Party you voted for. This was mass murder. They all belong in prison. We'll settle for destroying their careers and their traitorous party. Kurt Eichenwald, America died tonight. Economic suicide adopted to feed the insatiable greed of donors who've been refusing to dole out money to the GOP until they got their tax cuts. Voters fooled by propaganda and tribal hatred Millennials, move away if you can. USA is over. We killed it. James Martin, who's an advisor to the Vatican. Here we go. The U.S. will soon face the consequences of a tax bill that takes money from the poor to give to the rich. Those who voted for it will face consequences later when they're judged. So not only do you have blood on your hands.
Now you gotta reckon with the man upstairs, huh?
Internal damnation. Eternal damnation for voting for or supporting the Republican tax plan.
Well, there's an immediate tax break for those making $75,000 or less. And then just in 10 years, then they may have to pay more than they're paying now.
Well, is what I've understood to be.
But I'm not great with the numbers, Dan. That's why I rely on you.
So there's some things that are similar about the two bills. There's some things that are different. The big questions, the Washington Examiner does a nice summary on this. The big questions that will have to be decided in conference. The corporate tax rate, there's agreement on 20%. The president has indicated he'd be willing 22. To go up to 22, right? But that's the one. Corporate alternative minimum tax, permanent or expiring tax relief for individuals, which is sort of what you were getting at. The level of the exemption threshold for the estate, the death tax, and then the individual mandate repeal. With respect to Obamacare. Those are kind of the five big topic areas that are going to be discussed.
What about my mortgage interest rate tax write-off?
Well, those are similar. Okay. I mean, they both, you have caps of property tax deduction at $10K in both plans.
Okay.
Now
I can live with that.
But the SALT, the state and local tax deduction for income and sales taxes, those are repealed in both. So just understand that. The House bill and the Senate bill, just to go back to your $75,000 threshold, House bill, maximum rate capped at 25%, 9% a rate on the first $75,000 income over income over the 25% threshold, subject to special rules that effectively raise it. And then the Senate bill, the deduction is allowed for 23% of qualifying pass-through income, no other preferential rate. So this goes to the pass-through income for S-Corps that Ron Johnson and a couple of other senators were particularly concerned about being a bit lower. So there's a lot of similarities to those topic areas where few of the differences of opinion are, but I don't see anything that is going to be a hurdle to passing this. And by the way, so the people will die. I want to cede my time in response to that argument. Just want to lay out what people said. I'm going to lay out, I'm going to cede my time to Remy. He's this vlogger, parody producer at Reason Magazine, Reason.com.
Yeah. Should I check him out?
I want you to meet Congressman Max Hyperbole, Congressman Guy Knows Better, and Senator Justin Sane.
These cuts are blood money. People will die. Let's be very clear. Senate Republicans are paying for tax cuts for the wealthy with American lives.
People need kidneys. It's sad but decreed. Yet the senator's hoarding one more than she needs. I offer this bill and I hope you'll vote aye. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Traffic deaths have many crying with fear. Over 30,000 people are dying each year. This modest change I propose must be applied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Alcohol deaths are exceeding comparisons. Black people, white people, Native Americans. We need to ban alcohol. It can't be denied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Murders are bad. They have no defenders. Yet many are committed by repeat offenders. I say lifetime in prison, whatever the crime. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Well, I don't have a bill or a groan to detail. I just need a short clip for my donor email. Tim, there's blood on your hands. You want people to die. That good? Cool. Tim, dinner at 5? Yeah. The car deaths I mentioned are terrible stuff. Doesn't seem one seatbelt is ever enough. You must vote for my act so that fewer will cry. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. The carbs, the container, we cannot ignore. Whipped cream's killing more people than ever before. This bill would be passed and be ratified if those people there didn't want people to die. Why not weigh all the costs, the effects, the results? Empathize with each other as if we were adults. Use our brains to craft arguments, not vilify. See that freedom's a traitor.
You want people to die!
I tried. Crossing the street is incredibly tough. People look left and right, but rarely look up.
That's
Right. That is the.
Oh, that's great.
The problem, of course, is it's so difficult to parody these silly arguments. People will die. People will die. The hysteria of the left. It's shameful. It's embarrassing. And Remy over at Reason made it funny, but he highlights the absurdity by taking it to its logical extreme across all these, you know, issues that are raised.
And it's a video. Can you tweet it out?
Oh, yeah, I'll tweet it. Right. Yeah,
then I'll retweet it.
It's excellent.
Okay.
Oh, Stephen Hinsdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
It is generally thought of in healthcare and medical circles that in the United States on an annual basis, there are 100,000 preventable deaths that occur in hospitals. So I think the Summers logic is exactly wrong. If we keep people out of hospitals because they have no insurance, we're going to save give or take 100,000 people right there.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think he's just ass backwards. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, or you go with the people will die crowd, and that's just all kinds of new areas for politicians to make laws with all kinds of unintended consequences and trial lawyers to litigate all those laws. Dan in Mount Prospect.
Yeah, hi. No one seems to mention the fact, and I do taxes, that personal exemptions have been eliminated for families, and that hits right at the $50,000, $70,000 people. I happen to be 75, and I help people out gratis. So, in other words, if you have four kids, and there are two of you, you still have a partner. There's $26,000 in deductions that you lose.
Yeah, but the standard deductions also double.
Okay, the standard deduction the doubles, which means it goes up 12. You lose 12. 24 minus 12 is 12 minus. Also, the standard deduction is at 24 or 26, however you look at it. People that used to itemize, and a lot of people can itemize, if they're making $80,000, $90,000 because they have a home, they now will fall into the standard deduction area. So, in other words, if they were deducting $30,000 at itemized, and now they fall below 24, they'll take the standard, so they lose 6. And they also lose the exemptions. Believe me, I'm right on this.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing, but okay.
Well, I've run 10 people that I've done in the last year. Every one is less than 100,000, and every one pays more.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Here's my point, and I love your program, and you do a great job. I learn a lot from you.
Thank you.
The point that I'm making is nobody mentions that. All the things you mentioned early, and I had a sleepless night, so I was listening to you, but no one mentions that the exemptions are gone. And it has to be mentioned because I deal with and also when you mention that people making $30,000, I have a child that has some challenges and she's single and you say she doesn't pay taxes. She sure as hell does. And she pays a lot more percentage wise in Social Security than you do.
Well,
because you're over $125,000. What's that?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, so I mean, why isn't the full story told by the Republicans? I've been a Republican all my life, and believe me, if I'm still around in 2 or 3 years, you're going to get buried on this bill. I know what I'm talking about.
Well, the points you make are fair, and I'm happy to tell the full story because this is, a meatball Sunday, like most big pieces of legislation that come from Congress in both parties.
And I know you have a tight schedule, but the point is everybody that I talk to says the same thing. This is as essential as having to put your name on your return. There's nothing here to look at. They don't mention it. So I appreciate your time and go from there. You guys got a great show.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate your call and the points that you made. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm a CPA for a living, but I quit doing taxes professionally in 2003 just because of laws like this. But let me just mention, if this bill's going to be killing people, I should point out term life is incredibly cheap right now, so might be a way to cash in. And if you could pick which spouse passed away, both me and my wife have a million each on each other. So who's going to become the millionaire?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate that. Now he just does tax returns for sport. He doesn't do it professionally. Mike on the north side.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Boy, the liberals are complaining. People are going to die. The Sun Times says it's a tax for unborn children. Well, you know what? Maybe it's about time, right? I pay taxes for other people's kids to go to public school. I pay taxes for other people to sit at home and collect a check, right? You all claim you're doing it to help out the less fortunate. Well, who's less fortunate than some child that's about to be killed, right? Okay, I want to give Margaret Sanger Angel of Death Award to the whole Democratic Party. Instead of wasting all the money on useless stuff, when you run these programs like that in the state and the city, instead of wasting that money, you could have put that toward the poor. But no, you wanted to give it away to graft and corruption. And Dan, I don't blame you personally for this. I know you don't control your show. Mike Madigan's been controlling it for 35 years.
I'm not in control. Thanks, Mike.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
So when you order your reindeer sweater, it comes with an adhesive eyes and glittery reindeer nose.
Yeah.
So you can mold your rainbow boob sweater.
It's reusable. It's a versatile article of clothing. That's what I like about it. Yeah, I
this
know
is
you're,
the follow-up to the ugly sweater phenomenon.
You're
remember?
Yeah.
Well, 12 days of Christmas is coming up. 12 bars, I should say, of Christmas is coming up this weekend. So I have a feeling I'm going to see some ladies dressed like that.
All right. Well, you know, lead by example. We'd like to thank a number of our business benefactors
Woo-hoo!
Who are helping out
yes.
in our goal to this Christmas season to feed 3,000 children in Haiti and Guatemala for a year and provide them food or water for life. Food for a year, water for life, 3,000 kids in Haiti and Guatemala. That's our goal, along with food for the poor. And we've got great leadership from our entrepreneurs out there in the listening audience. LarryFriendBooks.com, Cafe Salsa in Countryside, the Neuroscience Center, Hyperbaric Centers of Chicago, Bradford Systems, AHS Plumbing and Sewer Repair, Chicagoland Mold Docs, Twin Supplies, Elgin Recycling, Hayward HVAC, TTI Medical Training, and Chris Jacobs Century 21 affiliated. We appreciate their generosity. And Amy, why don't you tell us how others can follow suit?
Well, if you want to be like the cool kids, if you want to help out with a great charity, we have properly vetted them. We want you to go to call this number. Well, you can go to 560theanswer.com, search for the keyword food, but call Michael Mann. His name is Michael Mann. Call him at 847-871-1527. If you have any questions, he will answer your questions. He will walk you through the program. Really, it's just the best way to take your company to the next level. If you've thought about advertising but just weren't sure, well, this is the time to join, because for $2,500, again, it's tax deductible, money goes to food for the poor, you will receive 41-minute commercials, best buy ever. So 847-871-1527, and we thank you in advance for your generosity.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and he's been saying it for a long time. Amy.
Yes, Dan.
Our friend Andy McCarthy has been saying this for a long time. Soylent Green is people. It is an impeachment investigation. It is not a Russian collusion counterintelligence investigation. And he's detailed it in no uncertain terms, a couple of very good pieces over the last couple of days since the Flynn plea agreement was announced. And we're pleased to have former federal prosecutor and contributing editor at National Review, where you can access all of his musings, Andy McCarthy. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, how are you?
Good. Now, I've already sung your praises, and I've so stipulated to your point that this is an impeachment investigation, obstruction of justice as the means to that impeachment, potentially. But let me ask you something about the FBI. Where I know, because of your time as a federal prosecutor, you have a lot of good relationships and default respect for the institution, if not all of the individuals, particularly in leadership. But are we at a place right now where, yes, the president is not above the law, and so the president can obstruct justice, but the FBI can also engage in a partisan parochial investigation, and there needs to be a check on both institutions?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, one of the things, Dan, that I've tried to hammer over the last year, especially in the context of the obstruction of justice allegations against Trump, is that when you listen to the higher-ups in whether it's the FBI or the Justice Department, particularly under the last
administration, the Justice Department. I don't think you can say this about the Attorney General Sessions, but you would think, listening to these people, that the Justice Department and the FBI constitute an independent fourth branch of government. And I think what they've done is they've gone haywire with the aspiration we have that we don't allow politics to infect our law enforcement. You know, the fact of the matter is it's true that we don't want politics to intrude on the four corners of any case. We don't want decisions about who to prosecute made based on whether they have an R or a D after their name. But law enforcement is an executive branch function. They answer to the president, and the reason that they answer to the president in this system is very important. The president is accountable to the voters. It's the one thing that makes law enforcement accountable to the American people. And if you don't have that, you have sort of what I think we're seeing now, which is, you know, law enforcement goes off the reservation and there's no way of reeling it in because it doesn't think it answers to anyone. And frankly, I think people in the executive branch, and very much so in this administration, have been afraid to rein them in because they're concerned they're going to be accused of, you know, more obstructive activity when, in fact, they need to rein in these law enforcement agencies. They're responsible for them.
So what you're saying, Mueller's core issue, which I've been told the whole time, did the Trump campaign collude with the Russians to meddle in the election? That was just a misdirection play?
Oh, well, Amy, I never thought – what I have always thought this was about and I'm not saying there's not a problem with Russia. I actually, you know, I thought there was a problem with Russia before November 8th, 2016, you know, like years and years before that.
Yeah.
So I was delighted to see people in the Democratic Party on the left suddenly realize that Russia was a problem. I don't know how long that will endure. But I never thought – I thought the – to the extent that they tacked on a collusion angle to the Russia meddling in the election, I thought that was a rationalization to do what they actually wanted, which was to assign a prosecutor to Donald Trump. And I, you know, I'm not a big Trump guy, as you guys know, but I really think that what went on here is that a decision was made that if there was any pretext that they could sell to do it, you know, they needed a monitor for this administration, and that's what this has been about from the beginning.
And with respect to holding law enforcement accountable, you have this nagging problem that I thought was resolved when Paul Ryan announced it was resolved several weeks back, but the Justice and FBI continuing to defy legal subpoenas for documents pertaining to both FISA warrants and the infamous Steele dossier. What basis do they withhold those documents legitimately?
I don't see a legitimate basis, but Dan, I'm going to say what I've been saying from the beginning, and I don't like this kind of behavior any more than anyone else does, but there's a fella living and working at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue
mm-hmm.
who can pick up the phone and say, I want those documents in Congress's hands or your resignation's on my desk by noon. And he's not doing that for some reason.
Well, but I mean, it would be odd, and it would just create all, I mean, from a PR perspective, which I'm sure that's what they're contemplating.
Well, you know,
Christopher Wray to resign.
Well, but these things never happen in a vacuum, right? You either have to weigh what will be the fallout of telling these guys, of the president ordering them to comply with the subpoenas, and what would be the political reaction to that versus allowing this to go on, where you have people in the administration who are defying congressional subpoenas in what's clearly a cover-up mode. I think at a certain point, the president can't worry about what the political fallout is, because at least half, and I think more than half of the country, will be cheering a president who takes responsibility for people in the executive branch and tells them to be transparent with Congress. What's the problem with that?
Michael Flynn charged with lying to the FBI. Is he going to face any other charges? And why do you feel he needed to lie? What do you think was the reason Michael Flynn did that?
I don't think he needed to lie. I can't understand why he did what he did, particularly a guy like Flynn, who was not an unsophisticated guy, 30 years in the military, former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, has a conversation with these FBI agents, doesn't have a lawyer present with him, and talks to them about telephone calls that he must know they have recordings of. I mean, I think it's a very interesting question why he did what he did, and you have to get inside his mind to understand that, and I just don't. On the other hand, Amy, the other question that ought to be asked is, why was the FBI treating him as if he were a criminal suspect? I mean, he didn't. The contacts that he had with Kislyak were perfectly conventional as far as transition activity goes, and they didn't need to ask him. They didn't need him to find out what went on in the conversations with Kislyak. They had recordings of them, and they knew from those recordings that there was nothing criminal or inappropriate that happened in the conversation. So I have a hard time trying to figure what motive they had to go interview him other than to hope that he would say something different from what was on the tape of the conversation, and that they could, you know, have a hammer over him for making false statements to the FBI.
Mark Stein compares this to the Martha Stewart case, where she was in prison for lying to the FBI, but there was no underlying crime that was provable. And he suggests it shouldn't be a crime to lie to the FBI the way the FBI lies to us with impunity. What about that when there's no underlying crime, as you're describing with Flynn, and yet they get you for lying to the FBI?
Well, you know, look, I love Mark, but if lying to the FBI wasn't a crime, a lot of people would do it, and our law enforcement wouldn't be very effective.
Right.
The problem he identifies is you know, we shouldn't have the government lying to us. And I think the big problem we have here is that we have forgotten, as a society, as well as a government, how to hold people accountable. So, you know, if you go for years and years and you have all these people doing outrageous things and looking you in the eye and telling you black is white, and far from impeaching, firing, or disciplining them, they continue to get promoted up the chain, then you're going to get this kind of abusive executive behavior. So the problem is us. I mean, we need to hold people accountable, and we don't.
Yeah, I think that's right. Let me ask you this. Alan Dershowitz suggests that the plea agreements, even with Papadopoulos, with Flynn, lying to the FBI, that demonstrates a weakness in the case that Mueller is putting together, because you don't want to get subjects for lying to the FBI. You want to get them on charges related to participation in a criminal conspiracy of some sort, and that doesn't seem to be what Mueller has been able to do to this point.
Yeah, I've been trying to make this point for weeks now. Federal prosecutors don't take small charges or pleas on minor counts in order to try to build major cases. When you get an accomplice who's involved in a major scheme, you make him plead guilty to the major scheme. It lends great credibility to your investigation, and it shakes the trees of other people who are involved in the scheme. You have somebody come into court, and you say, there was a scheme, I did it, I'm guilty, here's what I did, here's what my confederates did. And the way federal law enforcement works, the Justice Department's policy is you're supposed to charge people with the most severe, readily provable count that you can prove in every case. And the way cooperation works is you make them plead to the big charges, and you make them earn sentencing leniency. So they have to disclose everything. They come into court and testify. And if they do all those things, then at the end, the prosecutor can file a motion with the court that allows the judge to sentence the guy below the sentencing guidelines to as little as zero time. So that's how you entice cooperation. You don't do it by selling cases on the cheap. And if you were going to sell cases on the cheap, the last thing you would do is take pleas to counts of lying to the FBI from people that you think of as witnesses who are cooperating in your investigation. I mean, what's the one thing a jury's going to take away from
your witness.
He's a liar.
To lie to the FBI.
Yeah, right.
So why would anyone? What possible sense does it make to build a case that way?
Let me just about your interactions with the FBI as a federal prosecutor, and I just wonder, as you're reading these stories about Andy McKay that go back to the campaign, about this Peter Sturzok guy and his mistress, Miss Page. And I mean, I understand there are bad apples in any organization as big as the FBI, but we're talking about people in substantial positions of authority who've had impact on the Clinton email investigation as well as the Mueller investigation. Are you surprised, disappointed? How would you describe your reaction to some of what's been unearthed?
Look, I'm terribly disappointed, but I also think that, you know, there's an ethic in law enforcement. And, you know, I love Jim Comey, who I've known for a million years, more years than either one of us would probably like to remember. But I think, and I'm not saying anything I haven't said a million times before, it's the ethic of law enforcement that you don't speak publicly about investigations unless and until the government's ready to put its money where its mouth is and charge someone. And I think that in the last 3 years or so, 2 years, they got away from that, and they got themselves enmeshed in the politics of the 2016 election. Now, you can say that it wasn't they who got themselves enmeshed in it, that circumstances did this. That may be so, but you still follow the rules, which means you don't talk about investigations unless you're ready to charge someone. And when they got away from that, I think the signal that it sends to the whole institution is that we're in the politics business now. And the rules are no longer the rules. And when the rules get flouted at the top, then everybody thinks that they can flout the rules. And I think what you're seeing is a steady erosion of their attachment to their traditions. And that's, you know, if Chris Wray does anything in that institution, he needs to get that back. And if he can't, if he's not the guy to do that, then Trump should get him out now and get somebody in who can.
He is Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney, contributing editor at National Review, where you can always find his very insightful writings. Andy, always enlightening. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Amy. Have a great day.
You too.
Andy, join us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Oh, the list is growing. Business benefactors, people who've graciously donated $2,500 to Food for the Poor, and as a way of saying thank you, we are giving them 40 one-minute commercials that will air here Monday through Friday. Places such as Chicagoland Mold Docks, Twin Supplies, Elgin Recycling, my favorite, the Hyperbaric Centers of Chicago. Dan, you have got to go there. You will feel, you'll love it. It'll be the best time of your life.
I'm looking for a new lease on life.
You are. To become involved in our business benefactor program, please contact Michael Mann at 847-871-1527, 847-871-1527, or just go to 560theanswer.com. Search for the keyword food.
All right. Our goal, 3,000 starving children in Haiti and Guatemala. Your $50 individual donation provides food for a year, water for life for one of those children. Again, our goal, 3,000. So our business benefactors, our donor leaders in the business community are instrumental in us making that objective. So again, Michael Mann, 847-871-1527 to enroll, or 560theanswer.com/food.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Men are scum. Discuss. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. We can say that here on this show, Amy.
Yes.
Me and you both, you know.
Yeah.
Men are just the worst. But
you're scum. So you just,
yeah, right.
I mean.
But you cannot post that on Facebook lest you be subject to a 30-day suspension.
Really?
Yeah. A number of hysterical, man-hating shrews have been posting things like men ain't blank, all men are ugly, all men and men are scum. And a couple of comedians, including Marsha Belsky, don't know who she is, have been suspended by Facebook for 30 days because
they wrote that on Facebook.
Yeah, because according to a Facebook spokesman, that violates their community standards. The statement was a threat and hate speech toward a protected group, and so it would rightfully be taken down. That's the community standard. I don't know how men are a protected group. They're the group that's being hunted. But white men, a ProPublica investigation revealed in June that white men are, in fact, listed as a protected group by Facebook. That's because all genders, races, and religions are all protected characteristics under Facebook's current policy. Well, how can somebody, how can there be a protected group if everybody's a protected group?
How could there be any groups? I mean, we're all.
That's like if everybody owns it, nobody owns it. So, Facebook policy, men are scum, and they're not talking about specific men. It's just in general because of this alleged protected status. This is how stupid and anti-intellectual identity politics is. And it just twists people and organizations and social media platforms into knots, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And so, thinking
about... Are you feeling vindicated this morning? I mean, that Facebook stood up for you people and and suspended that evil woman?
Writing
that all men are... No, I'm serious. Yeah. I mean, that's a kind of a win for you guys.
No, it's not a win. I don't want to be... I don't want to play identity politics. I don't want to be a part... I'm not my gender. I'm not my race. Those are not... Those are characteristics, but they're not definition. Right. And so I thought back in the day, the whole point of, for example, a civil rights movement with respect to a group that was actually wronged based solely on their skin color was and, you know, the suffragette movement 40 years earlier and so on and so forth. I thought the whole idea was to get past that. And now
it seems they're still dwelling on it.
Well, identity politics, it's just the new racism. And it's the new sexism. It's the new all the isms and all the phobias. How does this manifest itself outside in the real world beyond just, oh, who cares what somebody posts on Facebook or if somebody's kicked off Facebook? Okay, I'm glad you asked. This week, the Portland, Maine School District adopted a comprehensive transgender policy for their students. The motion was approved by the Board of Education, requires all Portland, Maryland schools to implement annual staff training on gender issues to use the student's preferred name and personal pronoun, balake, and take the student's side at school if there's a disagreement with the parent's wishes. Did you hear that?
D to the A to the N? What did you say?
Take the student's side at school if there's a disagreement with a parent's wishes.
Oh, no.
Your kid is not your kid.
It's the school's. It's the government's property.
Plato's Republic. Huh.
Oh.
How about that? Parental control is subordinated to identity politics in this school district. Is that okay with you? In the interest of creating a welcoming environment, we're going to completely redefine K-12 education so that we can accommodate the redefinition of and the elimination of the definition of gender. Makes sense to you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Just to give an example, if a 7-year-old wanted to be called King Tut after learning about Egypt in first grade world history, his teachers would have to abide him. They would have to call him Your Majesty if he chose that as his new personal pronoun. Even though Majesty is a noun. But anyway, right. You get the point. And if parents dispute the child, the child controls. It is the child's judgment that controls on these matters with the backstop of the state vis-a-vis the public school. How would that go over for you at Blaine?
It wouldn't, and I'd yank my kid out of there because I'm in control of my student. I mean, I'm in control of my kids, and I'm not going to be told what, you know, if I have a problem with the school and they say, well, we're going to take your son's point of view and not yours, that's wrong. I mean, there's two sides to every story, sometimes three sides to every story, but my son, I don't want to give him that much power, and that's why there's such a breakdown at college campuses, because we've given them so much power. We've let them control things. And I don't know if it's our fault, the helicopter moms, or what exactly transpired to give kids this sense of entitlement so early. I mean, respect is something that is earned, and you respect your elders until you become an elder.
Well, what's given children this license is, who's given children this license? The adults.
I know. I mean, it started with the participation trophies, honestly. That's where they, you know, everyone gets a trophy just for signing up. No, you don't. I have three trophies, and I've earned all three of those trophies. But anytime my kid gets one of those medals for just showing up or signing up to be in a club or on a sports team, I throw that away. It sends the wrong message.
How about sport? Remember how I said that this was going to eliminate women's sports?
Oh, yeah.
It was going to marginalize women from participating in sports, which everybody should do in some form or fashion, just because of the values that participating in sport teaches you, especially growing up. Laurel Hubbard has been named to the New Zealand women's weightlifting team for the Commonwealth Games, sparking a bit of a controversy because Laurel Hubbard ain't a chick. She's a dude. Dude doesn't just look like a lady. Well, I should say lady doesn't just look like a dude. That is a dude. And again, I'm this isn't to poke fun.
No.
It's to say this is wrong. This is wrong.
Stay out of my sports.
And it's also to distill the implications of this. By the way, you've got an obvious advantage, physical advantage over women, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of the female weightlifters.
Are they protesting at home?
Well, one did. If you've been a male and you've lifted certain weights and you suddenly transition to a female, then psychologically you know you've lifted those weights before. So it's a physical as well as a psychological advantage, a salient point made by an actual female weightlifter. I personally don't think it's a level playing field. That's my personal view. I think it's shared by a lot in the sporting world. Sure it is, a lot with common sense and a recognition of the obvious. But that's not important. What's important is that this man pretending to be a woman competing in women's weightlifting is a quote-unquote role model for us. Is that what a role model is?
Why are we celebrating this? Why are we accepting it? I mean, and I'm not homophobic. I understand it. But I coach girls sports, and it's girls sports for a reason. Mm-hmm. I told you I met the coach of the Canadian Cycling Club. And he said that he has to take a transgender because he has to compete with Americans. He said every cycling club is taking a transgender on because we want to win.
Yeah, that's
and if
I said.
They're doing it, then we have to do it because we want to be competitive.
That's right. So no more men and women sports. Just eliminate it. That's what I've said from the beginning. So the WNBA goes away. All women's sports, women's tennis, women's golf, everything goes away because it's just one sport. And see how actual women enjoy that. And then all of the people that are associated with girls and women who participate in athletics who are now having their opportunities marginalized because men pretending to be women are playing their sports and eliminating their opportunities because of the natural advantages. See how – is that the new world you want to live in? Because that's where this is going, and it's going right quick. Holly and Hudson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, good morning. I had exactly the same thing happen to me in the public school that you were just referring to. I'm a substitute teacher in a high school, and I was reading the roll call, the official roll call. There was a kid in the class, a girl, who I had known by her girl name. I was unfamiliar that she had transgendered. I still called her her real name because that was on the official roll. She didn't answer. I ended up getting called in, why don't you address her by her new boy name, and I said, because it wasn't listed on the official roll, and they said, well, that's because her parents will not give us permission to change it. But when you're here, you have to go by what the student's wishes are.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And to ignore her transgendering was a big problem.
Thanks for the call, Holly. And here's the thing. We're going to put the kids in charge, and we're going to celebrate and participate in kids mutilating themselves. The 5, 6, 7-year-old who's a boy who says he's a girl, or is a girl and says he's a boy. And then parents facilitating gender reassignment surgery, which has happened. We've talked about it. And then a couple years later, all of a sudden, whether it's been something where they were just identifying or they actually went through with a surgery, they say, oh, well, no, maybe I am cisgendered. Maybe I am the sex I was born. I mean, the lobotomized approach to this is jarring to me, and how easily people are led down this primrose path of destruction, even hurting your children. It's incredible. Alan in Rockford.
Good morning. What we're heading towards here is a macro version of Village of the Damned, aren't we? You know, the parents are going to be sitting at their breakfast tables, and the kids are going to stare their heads off their parents. It's insane to think about the fact that we have pediatricians now saying that you can't slap a baby's butt and say, congratulations, it's a boy or a girl. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not allowed anymore. And if you're in Washington, you could be 15 or 16 years old, get gender reassignment surgery, but you have to be 21 years old to buy a pack of cigarettes. Really?
Well, here's Thanks a disgusting, for the call, Alan. Real quick, a disgusting story about catering to your kids' needs. We know somebody in California who was bragging that they took their son to a hospital in Boston because he's 5'4" and he wanted to be taller. So they broke his legs. It's this, and they do it. This, you want to talk about mutilation. They break your legs 4 different times, your femur and your tibia, and they stretch your legs out, make your bones longer so that he could be taller. And that's legal. I mean, that's barbaric in my mind, but that's how much parents are catering to their children.
Do you understand?
Because they think he'll be more successful and happier if he's taller.
Yeah, do you understand? This is the thing. And the Supreme Court is taking up the Masterpiece Cake Shop case today. You know, do you have First Amendment rights when it comes to the progressive left if you disagree? And the answer is increasingly you don't. And here's the thing that so many people got wrong, including a lot of erstwhile conservatives who supported civil unions and put us down the path of redefinition of marriage, which is the next stop was redefinition of gender, redefinition of sex, and the gender politics. Progressivism is a train. It doesn't stop. Oh, this is all they want. We concede this point, and then we move on to big issues like tax cuts and spending restraint. No, that's not how it works. Pay attention. Take a little walk down memory lane of the last couple of hundred years. It is always moving. It is on to the next power play. Do you get it? You want to talk about people will die with the left talks about with tax cuts. How about these issues? Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. That whole leg surgery stuff, I think France was toying with the idea of putting feet on backwards so they could retreat faster. But the whole putting children in charge, it was an old Twilight Zone with Bill Mumy as a child.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Psychologically torturing the adults, and which was interesting because in that case, Bill Mumy knew that he had the power, and he was wielding it over the adults. In most cases, children, when control is given to children, they don't know it right away until maybe they're teenagers, and they're so wrecked by that time that everybody's lives are out of control. If you want to take a really good look at what sort of immature policies like that reek down the road, just look at most of the policies that Democrats have enacted.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. Bill in Norridge.
Hi again, Amy. Good morning.
Morning.
Especially this one's for Amy. Amy, the big thing that I think isn't being discussed is what happens to all the opportunities for women in college, scholarships. All of those basketball scholarships and golf and every other opportunity that women will have. will be gone. So, you know, that's another big thing that needs to be discussed in the result, the, you know, the fallout from what's what you're discussing this morning.
Thanks. Thanks for the call, Bill.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Bells will be ringing.
All right. Our 2017 campaign for food for the poor, our goal to feed 3,000 children in Guatemala and Haiti for a year to provide them water for life. And the way we get there is with the leadership of our successful entrepreneurs, business owner and operators, and our generous individual donors, too. Let me talk about the Business Benefactor Program. That's a $2,500 gift to Food for the Poor, and you get, in response for your generosity, our gratitude in the form of 41-minute commercials for your business that will run in the prime broadcasting hours weekdays on our station, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. You call Michael Mann, our sales director, 847-871-1527. Again, Michael Mann, 847-871-1527. And we want to thank so many of the businesses that have already signed up.
Oh, yeah. Bradford Systems, Chicagoland Mold Docs, Twin Supplies, LarryFriendBooks.com, Cafe Salsa, ooh, in Countryside. And really, I'm watching the video right now. We're going to be tweeting it out soon from my trip to Haiti with Food for the Poor. Such a well-run organization, and they have helped thousands of people. And I know they always say you should take care of the people God puts in your life. That's why I feel such a burden to make this campaign work, because I was there and I met these kids, and they are just so appreciative of any food or clean water, and that, they really need our help.
That video is not going to be kind of cringeworthy like Ed Sheeran with the those kids in Liberia, I think it was, is it?
No, but I mean, it's their reality. It's you know, they every day they wake up, Dan, they don't care about toys or clothes. They care about food and clean water and just the basic necessities to survive, and Food for the Poor is just done such a wonderful job. They've been on the ground in Haiti since 1987. They're also currently on the ground in Caribbean islands that have been ravaged by the hurricanes. So they're here to help, and we need your help. Again, become a business benefactor. Call Michael Mann, 847-871-1527, or go to 560theanswer.com, search for the keyword food. But if you'd like to make a personal donation on behalf of your well-fed children or grandchildren, just go to 560theanswer.com. Search for the keyword food.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Coming up next, it's me, Mike Gallagher, right after Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and so Democrats are responding to the looming signature by the president on a tax cut plan that will be conferenced between the Senate and the House. There are differences. It's a handful of topic areas where there's going to be some negotiation, likely including potentially the corporate tax rate.
Okay.
Even though they both are at 20% right now, there's been some discussion of give there. Corporate alternative minimum tax, permanent versus expiring tax relief for individuals, the threshold at which the death tax kicks in, and the individual Obamacare mandate repeal. Those are all topics for conferees, including our own Peter Roskam, to discuss amongst themselves and come to a final comprehensive tax cut package that will be sent to President Trump's desk for signature before Christmas. That seems likely to happen. And so knowing that they have now lost this effort to derail tax cuts, Democrats are responding by suggesting, well, you know, we're murdering the poor and raping the middle class. I'm not hyperbolizing. Bruce Bartlett, former Reagan economic advisor, on with Joy Reid on MSNBC.
It really defies comprehension. Maybe they think that the poor have it so easy that they need to have to pay more taxes to force them to go out and work more. The amazing thing is that people seem to be accepting this so meekly and mildly. It's really akin to rape.
Rape.
Oh, my gosh.
Bruce Bartlett, by the way, Reagan economic advisor, but he long ago abandoned supply side for Keynesian economics, so he's really a man of the left now. Larry Summers, always been a man of the left. Former president at Harvard, former Treasury Secretary for Clinton. He was on Bloomberg, and you got your rape. Here comes your murder.
It's very hard to quantify precisely. My piece explains why an estimate that thousands will die as a consequence of this bill is actually a very conservative estimate, done much, much more carefully based on much more rigorous evidence than the absurd claims made by some that this bill will somehow pay for itself.
Economic suicide, according to Kurt Eichenwald. America died tonight when the Senate passed its tax cut plan. But I'll tell you what, I think it's better if we cede our time to
Remy.
Well, Representatives Max Hyperbole, Guy Knows Better, and Senator Justin Sane, they all want to weigh in on this, too.
These cuts are blood money. People will die. Let's be very clear. Senate Republicans are paying for tax cuts for the wealthy with American lives.
People need kidneys. It's sad but decreed, yet the senator's hoarding one more than she needs. I offer this bill and I hope you'll vote aye. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Traffic deaths have many crying with fear. Over 30,000 people are dying each year. This modest change I propose must be applied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Alcohol deaths are exceeding comparisons. Black people, white people, Native Americans. We need to ban alcohol. It can't be denied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Murders are bad. They have no defenders, yet many are committed by repeat offenders. I say lifetime in prison, whatever the crime. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Well, I don't have a bill or a groan to detail. I just need a short clip for my donor email. Tim, there's blood on your hands. You want people to die. That good? Cool. Tim, dinner at 5? Yeah. The car deaths I mentioned are terrible stuff. Doesn't seem one seatbelt is ever enough. You must vote for my act so that fewer will cry. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. The carbs, the container, we cannot ignore. Whipped cream's killing more people than ever before. This bill would be passed and be ratified if those people that didn't want people to die. Why not weigh all the costs, the effects, the results? Empathize with each other as if we were adults. Use our brains to craft arguments, not vilify. See that freedom's a traitor.
You want people to die!
I tried. Crossing the street is incredibly tough. People look left and right, but rarely look up.
Oh, all right. Let's see if Steve Cortez, Fox News contributor, can top that. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. I hope you're not expecting me to wrap this early in the morning.
Oh, the entire interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, the entire interview. I want it in at least iambic pentameter, if nothing else. So, your response, I mean, you're for those who don't know, you were on Fox Business for a long time prior to getting involved in electoral politics and supporting President Trump. And so your background is in financial services. So what say you to the tax plan?
Listen, I think it's a very solid tax plan. It's not everything I want, particularly on the individual side. I'd like something much more aggressive, and I'd like more simplification on the individual side. But that said, I think this is probably the best that we can get through. When I say we, I mean sort of Team Trump can get through this Congress that can pass both the House and Senate. On the business side, and you know, I almost don't like to use the term corporate taxes, because I think that when you say corporate, for most people, I think that evokes thoughts of sort of General Electric, right? Or these are these massive corporations who, first of all, don't pay that tax anyway. They don't. They pay a much lower effective tax rate because of legal tax avoidance and because of mechanisms that allow them very sophisticated means of either deferring or avoiding taxes. Who does pay the corporate tax rate, which I prefer to call the business tax rate, are mostly small and medium-sized enterprises, are the ones that are trying to grow, the real dynamic organizations in our economy, the ones that are employing people and innovating and doing great things. Unfortunately, our entrepreneurial spirit in America has largely been dampened. I think it's mainly because of excessive regulation and an onerous tax code. Well, President Trump is already taking care of regulation. That we are well on our way to regulatory relief. I think it's been magnificent and very freeing for American enterprise. Now we've got to tackle the second part, which is a much less onerous, less confiscatory tax code. So I love that part of this tax plan. We've got to get out of the conference. The devil's sometimes in the details. You know, whether it's 2022, the point is it's going to be lower, and I think that's going to allow small and medium-sized businesses to really grow and prosper.
A lot of people have argued this, you know, what I hear amongst my friends is that if corporations are doing so well, you know, the stock market's at an all-time high, house sales are up, why do we need to give corporations a break?
Right. Well, again, huge corporations are doing great, but small and medium-sized businesses, I think, are having a tough time. And again, a tough time, not because of, you know, in small business surveys, for instance, I'll take my word for it. National Federation for Independent Business surveys its members, small business owners, and they said, what are your chief hurdles? It's not competition. That came in number three. It was taxes and regulation, number one and number two. So I don't think that small business is doing great in this country. For instance, one of the worst things that happened after the recession was for the first time in recorded history, we had more businesses closing than opening in the United States. So we don't have the kind of dynamism in our economy that we need to have. And so I think one of the key reasons is overtaxation. And again, don't take my word for it. Bernie Marcus, who founded Home Depot, he recently said in an interview on Fox News, a segment that I was part of, he said, I don't think I could start Home Depot today. He said, because of the tax structure, I don't think we could grow that company if we were to start it today. I mean, what a shame to hear something like that from a mogul, a titan, an entrepreneurial hero of America who built an incredible business. Home Depot's fine now because they're massive, but he doesn't believe he could start it from fresh. The tax code has to unleash the entrepreneurial power of America, and I think that that is already happening under President Trump, and it will accelerate if we get this tax package done. The good news is things are getting better. Whether it's the stock market, that's great, but the stock market did well under Obama while Main Street didn't. Main Street's starting to do better. Individual wages are starting to rise. Consumer confidence is soaring. So things are getting better. If we throw in a more sensible and fair tax structure like this one is, that this proposal entails, I believe that the economy in 2018 is going to just soar.
Yeah, well, and it's important to point out, as Mitch McConnell did, that the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businesses, endorsed the Senate plan. They support it. I mean, these are really your entrepreneurial capitalists. A lot of the big boys are your corporatist rent seekers. The other thing about business taxation that's not mentioned enough by Republicans, conservatives, it's all passed on to the consumer. So, you know, what are you talking about giving anybody a break? You're giving yourself a break, and you look through the eyes of the consumer to find the morally just position in a free society, in my estimation, and I'm just stealing from Frederick Bastiat, who's much smarter than I am. So, Steve, with respect to the potential here, the pitfalls, right now it's unpopular, and it's got about a year to get more popular in advance of the midterm elections. And so what's the sense of the politics of this in terms of people starting to feel, in some cases, the beneficial impact? In other cases, depending on how you're situated, some negative impact in terms of your tax liability.
Right. I think a couple of things. I don't think that we Republicans have done a great job messaging on this, particularly the Republicans on Capitol Hill, quite frankly. I think they allow the left to mire us in the details. There are some people whose taxes are going to go up. For instance, if you're a W-2 high-income earner in a high-tax state like Illinois, you may very well see a tax increase. Now, I'm not happy about anybody's taxes going up, but I also think in the name of fairness, low-tax states have quite frankly been subsidizing high-tax states for a long time. And so I get that argument, even as an Illinois resident who might get punished personally. I get the argument from somebody in Texas and Florida who says, why should we subsidize your lunacy in states like New Jersey and California and Illinois? So, you know, I understand that. But we've been mired down in those details. I want to focus on the bigger picture, which is economic growth. What has so ailed America for a decade, quite frankly, I believe, is slow growth. I think and it's caused all kinds of bad effects, and not just economic. I think a big part of our division as a society is because of slow growth and because of insane inequality, quite frankly, because the top end has done fine. If you own assets, it's been a great decade for you. If you own a lot of stocks and real estate, for wage earners, it's been a real slog. It's been a tough decade of slow growth. And for the middle class, quite frankly, no growth. So we start delivering growth, which is already happening in 2017. If it accelerates into 2018, which I believe it will, because, you know, business plans ahead, right? So even though the tax cuts won't take effect quite yet, once they know they're coming, they're more willing to invest. And I think this can be perhaps the biggest near-term catalyst into the 2018 elections is the return of corporate profits from overseas. So corporations have, it's estimated as much as $4 trillion
that they are keeping overseas because they don't want to pay our ridiculous corporate tax rate. Allowing them to repatriate, to onshore those profits and invest them in American workers and technology and capital expenditures, I think that is going to unleash a torrent of economic activity. That's an expansion that we haven't seen, quite frankly, since probably the 90s. You know, it's almost sad. You know, I'm a middle-aged guy, Dan. Sometimes I think young people in this country, they haven't seen America really grow yet in their lifetimes. They haven't seen it. Once they do, once they see the kind of growth we had in the 80s or the 90s, I think it's going to heal a lot of our divisions as a society. And I think it's also going to be fantastic politically for President Trump and the Republicans.
But we can't be guaranteed that these, you know, corporations are going to invest in growth. I mean, I have a fear that they're just going to pocket the money themselves.
Right. No, listen, that's a legitimate worry because that's what they've done primarily for the last decade, right? It's primarily financial engineering is what we call it, you know, sort of the financial markets. So dividends and buybacks rather than investing, rather than capital expenditures. CapEx is what we really need. I believe, though, the reason they haven't done that is largely because of government policies, because they didn't have confidence that there was a growth agenda in the country. There wasn't a growth agenda, quite frankly, under President Bush. There certainly wasn't under President Obama. I think there's a growth agenda now.
Included in both those plans is 5 years of expensing for new equipment in year one, which is a pretty good incentive. I wanted to get your take on one other thing, Steve, before we let you go. Interesting. Germany right now is offering rejected asylum seekers from Syria $3,500 to leave their country.
What?
Yeah. So that's their immigration policy. Here back in the United States, Supreme Court yesterday upheld, finally, by lifting the injunction that was imposed by a couple of politicians masquerading as federal district court judges, upheld Trump's temporary travel ban that applies to travelers from Chad, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, countries where we don't have confidence in vetting the individuals trying to get into America from their home country. And this, particularly against the backdrop of the verdict in the Kate Steinle case, immigration policy, once tax reform is moved off the front burner, are we going to see more of that, do you think, in the new year?
I do. And I think, Dan, we're going to get to that pretty quickly. And we have to some degree, because the clock is ticking on DACA. And what I have advocated strongly, and I got to talk to the president directly about this, is I am pro-DACA, and I disagree with some of the people within the Trump administration who want DACA rescinded. I think these people came here as children. They didn't choose to break our immigration laws. I think it's a separate category of illegal immigrants that should be granted status. But in exchange for that, I think that the administration has to get – there has to be a bargain, a negotiation. And I think it should be an end to chain migration, which has been a miserable failure for America. 70% of our immigrants come not by merit, but basically because they have relationships with other immigrants. That's just a dumb way. It's a dumb filter. It's a dumb way to decide who are the best and brightest and most ambitious people that we want to have here. So an end to chain migration and, I think, more resources for the border. President Trump, I think, gets too little credit for what he's already done on the border. The fact that illegal crossings have plunged in his presidency just by better enforcement and clear rhetoric, to me, is a huge win for the American people, but we need to finalize that win. It needs to go to zero illegal crossings, and with more resources for ICE, I think that will happen on the border. So I do anticipate that deal is going to be struck in January.
He is Steve Cortez, Fox News contributor, former Trump Hispanic Advisory Council head. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
The list is getting longer. Our business benefactors, those who have partnered up with us and with Food for the Poor to help provide food for a year and water for life for 3,000 children in Haiti and Guatemala and in the Caribbean where they've been hit by those hurricanes. LarryFriendBooks.com. We have Bradford Systems, Elgin Recycling, Hayward HVAC, TTI Medical Training, and the list goes on and on. But you want to do this sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and the way you do it, make a $2,500 tax-deductible gift to Food for the Poor, and in return, we give you 41-minute commercials that will run prime time on our airwaves to advance the interests of your business. The way you enroll, call Michael Mann, our sales director, 847-871-1527. Again, 847-871-1527 is where you can find Michael Mann, or you can enroll online, 560theanswer.com/food.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.